Good morning. I hope to be working on a record this week. We started Paragilad Pasach Avav last week. I doubt that we'll finish it today, so we may end up doing 3 weeks on the same Pasach, although it wasn't the whole day last week, it won't be the whole day next week, but spread it over 3 weeks. We'll see what we can do. But we're being introduced to Yeravam ben Nevat, who certainly is a very important figure in Tanakh and the history of Kal Yisrael, not for good, but he was quite a complex and had potential for greatness. And we pointed out that Chazal mentioned that his Torah was Eim Hodofi, was pure Torah, and that he was on par with Achia Shiloni and compared to everybody else in his generation. The two of them made everyone else look like grass. And he was chosen by the Navi to be the king of the Aseres HaShvatim. And yet he is the prototypical Chotei Umachti. And his downfall was enormous. And the impact that he had in Kali, so they never recovered from. So we will see a little bit more about him later. But let's take a look again at the Pasuk. For Yeravam ben Nevat, Efrasi Minat Sreda, B'Shem Yimutzrua, HS Isha Almana. Eved Hashem, he was a servant of Hashem, of Ayarem Yad B'melech, he raised his hand up against the king. We will see, I'm cheating a little because it's really connected to the next pasuk, but we're not going to officially do it, but if you peek ahead, the next pasuk says, V'zeh Adar Sh'arim Yad B'melech, and it goes on to say that Shlomo built the Milu, which we had mentioned before, and closed the openings of the Ir David that David had opened. So what exactly was going on? And what was the Yarm Yad Bamelech? So the Gemara says a very interesting thing. The Gemara says, why was Yeravam Zacha to be the king? Because he was Mochiach Shlomo. He criticized Shlomo for Shlomo's error. Why was he punished? Because he criticized Shlomo Berabim. He did it in public and embarrassed Shlomo. So that's what the Gemara says. And what was the criticism that he leveled against Shlomo? There are a number of interpretations. We'll talk about two of them. And they're both brought down in the Gemara. One was that there was a wide open plaza that David had left in Ir David, as well as openings in the wall. And the purpose of this was to make it easier for people to come to be Ola Rego. When they came to Be'ol Regel, that plaza, they used to camp out there. And there were many more entrances into the city rather than just the gates that had originally been built so that it could accommodate the traffic. Right? Imagine if they opened up a couple of new bridges and tunnels into Manhattan. It would, what it would do for the traffic. So the it wouldn't do anything for the traffic in Manhattan, but at least they're getting in and out. So Shlomo had built this in to make to accommodate the daughter of Paro and various other wives. So he built different palaces and etc. etc. And as a result, this made it more difficult for those who were being Ola Rego. So this was one interpretation of the Tolchacha that Yeravam gave to Shlomo. What is extremely ironic about this is that the main chait, or the original chait, that other things followed, but the original chait of Yeravam was to prevent Kali Yisrael from being Ola Rego. So here he is going and criticizing Shlomo, and apparently rightly so, because it says he was rewarded for this tochacha, for making it a little bit more difficult to be Ola Rego, and he basically made it impossible for the Aseres HaShvatim to be Ola Rego. So he did worse than Shlomo in the very thing that he criticized Shlomo, which is certainly not the first time in history that such a thing has happened, and certainly not the last. Chazal viewed that as a bit bigger kitrug, right? If you criticize somebody for something, and then you yourself are guilty of the same thing, it's worse than if you never criticize them. And there are various examples of this in Chazal, and this is one of them, that if you end and criticize Shlomo, then you go and are are chote with all the regal, it is worse. I think the Hesber, the understanding for that, can be sort of brought out in a sefri that says, on the pasuk, it says, Arar asher lo yakim es divrei Torah azaz. So the sefri says like this. So a person is lamad v'limad, he learned Torah and he taught Torah, v'kiyam, and he kept the mitzvahs, v'hispik v'yado lahachzik, and he had the capacity to be machzik Torah, you know, to support Torah, v'lo hichzik, but he didn't do it, hareze b'chlal arar, he's included in the curse of arar asher lo yakim es divrei Torah azaz. That refers to a person who had the ability to support Torah, to uphold Torah, and didn't do it. He's bichlal arer. Misha lo lamad v'lo limed, person did not learn and did not teach. It says v'lo hispik biyad lahachzik, and he did not have the ability to support Torah. V'hichzik, but he supported it anyway with mesiras nefesh. Harei ze bichlal baruch. So that's included in the category of baruch. I assume, by the way, the pshat of that is not a person who deliberately, you know, through choice, decided not to learn and not to teach and not to keep the mitzvahs. Such a person is not going to be rewarded just because he supports Torah. You can't buy your way out of the Torah. But it's probably referring to somebody who was unable to. He had a lot of tirdas, he had difficulties, whatever it was, with parnasa. For whatever reasons, he wasn't. And he had maybe a legitimate excuse, but Lamaisi, he didn't learn, and he did, in a great extent, he didn't teach. But he did, he was moser nefesh to be machzik Torah, harezev chal baruch. But a person who did learn and did teach, but he was not machzik Torah, and he had the ability to be machzik Torah, harezev chal baruch. The implication of that is that the fact that he learned Torah and taught Torah is part of the taina against him. Otherwise, the Chazal should have just said, "Mi shelo hichzik Torah is v'chal arer." Why does it say lamad v'limed and lo hichzik? And I think the explanation is that a person can sort of excuse, to a certain extent, excuse his behavior because of the failure to understand the significance of what he's doing. A person could come and say, "Listen, it's true. I didn't support Torah. But I didn't know what Torah was all about. I never had the opportunity to learn. I never had the opportunity to teach. I didn't appreciate the greatness and the beauty of Torah. So, all right, you know, it reduces the blame somewhat. Had I known what Torah was, had I appreciated what it is, of course I would have supported it. But a person who is lamad v'limed, he appreciates what Torah is. He learned it himself. He's taught it himself. So he knows the beauty of Torah, he knows the greatness of Torah, he knows the depth of Torah, he knows the importance of Torah. And he still didn't support it. So then, that is a great taina against him. Derech Agav, this whole idea of the support of Torah is essential to the appreciation of Torah because it's not a personal thing. Some people sort of get the feeling, if I'm learning, everything's fine. But if you really appreciate Torah, then all of Klal Yisrael has to have a chelek in Torah, and the whole world has to have a chelek in Torah. There's a famous piece by Reb Chaim Volozhin, which in my view, it's quoted in one direction very often, which is true also, but in my view, it also supports another direction. Reb Chaim Volozhin talks about the significance of Torah, and he says that a person... He talks about the Chazal that is Tovei El Bono Shator, the humiliation of Torah. He says, every part of Torah is precious, and every Jew is precious, and every part of Torah should be learned. And people who neglect a Limud HaTorah, it's an insult to the Torah itself. And he gives a mashal, that if they used to, and maybe they still do, I don't know how it works, they probably not. But they used to, when they had loggers that would chop down the big trees and they would use it for wood or for paper, for whatever it is. So it was very hard to transport it. Now what do they do with the logs? So typically what they would do is they would use the rivers to transport the logs, and they would roll the logs to the river, tie them together and make this big raft consisting of whatever number of logs, and somebody would ride the raft down the river. And he would guide it with whatever he had, you know, an oars or a tiller, to guide the raft down the river to reach its destination, where they had the mills that would process it. What would happen if in the middle of the river the guide, the driver, would jump off? He says two things would happen. One is that he would probably drown. The other thing is that the logs would probably get destroyed and get lost. They'd crash against the banks, they'd get grounded, hit the rocks. So two things are happening. The person loses out, but the logs also get lost. So this is his mush. He says a person is a person, a Jew, who's supposed to learn Torah. The logs are the Torah they're supposed to learn. If he separates himself from the Torah, then he loses out. In a spiritual sense, he drowns. He separates himself from the source of life. But the Torah also loses out. Because if nobody's learning the Torah, it's crashing against the rocks. So therefore, there is a responsibility to learn Torah, and not only Stam, but to learn every part of Torah. And it's usually quoted in the context that you have to learn every part of Torah. Nothing should be neglected. And that's why, you know, you have different groups that learn all kinds of limudim, because Torah shouldn't be neglected. But the other part of what he says is that every Jew should be learning Torah. And that's also Elbana Shatara, because each Jew has a different chelik in Torah. When he's not learning, Torah is also being neglected. So it's really a very powerful mechayev, obligator, to spread Torah to others, to be machzik Torah, to teach Torah, not just to learn Torah yourself. So this is a person who appreciates Torah must do that. So if somebody is lamad v'limeid and he's lo hichzik, that's a greater taina than if he's lo lamad v'lo limeid v'lo hichzik. So in a similar way, one could say that this was why the taina on Yerubim was increased. If you did not appreciate the importance and the greatness and the significance of the mitzvah ol regel, so might be less of a taina on you when you stopped it. Okay, it's still a taina. Obviously, it's a mitzvah in the Torah. You have no excuse for not allowing Jews to be ol regel. But I thought, you know, it's to preserve the kingdom, so important, and I was mara heter. But you yourself, with great courage, one might add, it's not such a pashuta thing to criticize the king, and we'll see that some actually wanted to kill him, but maybe that's because he did it in public. But it's not such a simple thing. Nobody else had the guts to do it. So with great courage, because you appreciated the mitzvah of ol regel, you went and criticized the king. So if you understand what ol regel is, how could you stop it? So it makes the taina against him that much greater. A second interpretation of what the Tochacha was not when he closed up these passages and the plaza, it wasn't to, it didn't it, the purpose that David did this was to control entrance Shlomo into Yerushalayim so that they could levy tolls, taxes on the people who entered, and to use these taxes to build up all the palaces and whatever it is that he was doing. In other words, he made toll bridges, toll roads into Yerushalayim, rather than having free access. Don't tell this to the MTA and the Port Authority, but this was a taina against Shlomo, that let people come in without having to pay taxes. So I actually had this, I don't know if it's still like this, it's been a few years since I've been there, but a number of years ago I drove up, my sister lives in Montreal and we're going there for a simcha, we drove up, and Montreal is on an island. There's a number of bridges that access the island. And at least as of that time, I don't know if they changed it, they were not toll bridges. So I remember driving with the kids and we're driving across the bridge, there's no toll, and the kids say, where's the toll? Like, it's a bridge, isn't there supposed to be a toll? Such a big long bridge. We do have some bridges on the east side without tolls, so those are short little bridges, you know. But the idea that he made people pay to enter Yerushalayim, that was the taina against Shlomo.
Why would Shlomo have done that? Before we talked about old wealth and silver in the streets and like.
Gelt is good, you know. Rav Shimon tells over the story from the Gadol Miminsk. That he once had a din Torah that came before him. And the two litigants, one was, we're talking about loggers, one was the owner of forest lands, a very wealthy person, one was a worker, and they had some dispute over what salary arrangements, and it was for a relatively small sum of money, a few rubles. So the wealthy man said, "You can know, you could see it's self-evident that I'm telling the truth. Because I'm a rich man. I don't need this money. I'm only here because of the principle of the thing. I don't want him to rip me off. But the money is very important to him. He has negias. Right? But I'm obviously here for the truth." So the government said, "Nuh-uh, geld is good. Money is good. I'm not so sure that you're here for the truth." And I remember hearing this story from the Rosh Yeshiva, and shortly thereafter, I heard some news item where there was it was a ball player of some sort that was having these autograph sessions where he charged $10 for an autograph. And the guy on the radio was saying, "Here, this guy's making whatever millions of dollars a year, you know, from the fans, you know, for his being a sports fan. He has to charge a 10-year-old kid $10 to get his autograph. He needs those $10. I'm saying, "Yeah, geld is good." But it's hard to say what his cheshbon was. I don't know exactly what Shlomo's cheshbon was. It doesn't say, but this was a means of financing these operations.
Whether or not he was over on Kesef Yarba, right. He didn't do it.
But there are different opinions. Obviously, that would not be consistent.
Right.
Or maybe he did this later. At the beginning, he didn't do it. He did this later in his life. But those were the two criticisms. Now, we have a very fascinating, and it's a Yesod Gadol in Darkei Hashem, that comes out of this Chazal, which all the Mefarshim point out, and you see in other places too. But this is perhaps a step further. There's a concept. Kadosh Baruch Hu does not cancel. Mitzvahs and Averis do not cancel each other out. A person gets punished for his Averis and he gets rewarded for his mitzvahs, and both of them take place. And it's not like, you know, you, in terms of being Machri of the world, there is some type of cancellation. You know, Din, you know, Masa Masa, Rov Zakai, Rov Chayev. But in terms of a person's individual Din V'cheshbon, there's no cancellation. Every Avera is punished and every mitzvah is rewarded. Not only that, and this is what you see from this Chazal, within the same act, there's no cancellation. If Yeravam did a good deed in the sense of having the bravery and the courage to criticize Shlomo, where Shlomo deserved to be criticized, so he was also to the Malucha. But at the same time, he embarrassed him where he shouldn't have done that, by doing it in public, so he's punished. There's no cancellation. He's rewarded for the good part of the deed, and he's punished for the bad part of the deed. The same deed, the same action, the same maisa. There is a machlokus rishonim between Rashi and the Ramah, exactly what Yeravam had in mind. And Rashi's interpretation makes this into an even bigger chiddush. The Rashi... If I could find it. All right, it's really Rashi in the Gemara. Rashi here is not so conclusive. It says, Rashi in the Gemara adds the words, in order to embarrass him. So according to Rashi, Yeravam's deliberate intent was to embarrass him. According to the Ramah, Rav's intent was to give him tochacha. And he thought that it was appropriate to give him tochacha b'rabim. Why? The Ramah explains that there's a halacha that anything, any sin which is done b'rabim requires tochacha b'rabim. And therefore, since this was a public deed, there should be a public tochacha. However, he was mistaken. And there are a number of reasons for that. Number one, that halacha of a sin b'rabim requires tochacha b'rabim is only if it was deliberate, not if it was shogeg. And Shlomo did not do this with the kavana of restricting all the regal. Let's say he was done. He thought it was the right thing to do. So a chet b'shogeg should never be criticized or given tochacha b'rabim. Secondly, what Shlomo did was not exactly a chet. There's a whole discussion whether or not it applies even to a Nisa Darabanan. According to most views in the Rishonim, this halacha only applies to something which everybody knows is Asur. It's a Nisa Daraisa. And the person knew himself that it was a Nisa Daraisa and did it anyway. So there's an Inyan of Chil Hashem. If somebody is brazenly violating an Aveira in public, knowing full well that it's Aser. Everybody knows that he knows it's Aser. So nobody stands up and criticizes him. It's sort of like almost like nobody cares. So there's a Chil Hashem, so you have to give Tachach in public. But something which is not a blatant Aveira, so you give Tachach in private. What Shlomo did was certainly not a blatant Aveira. It was a taina in him, it wasn't proper. He wasn't over any Isser in any of these things. There's no Isser in the Torah closing the doors of Yerushalayim, and he wasn't actually preventing them from being all the regal. So it's only that it's an insensitivity, and David did more than you, and you did less, and you shouldn't have done it, and so on. Very good, it's a valid criticism. But there is no excuse to do that criticism of Rabin. But Rabin was mistaken. So Rabin did not intentionally embarrass Shlomo. It was unintentional, but it was negligence on his part. He should have been mevarad halacha more thoroughly, and therefore he gets punished for that part. At the same time, he gets rewarded. But according to Rashi, Yerubim's intent was deliberate. He wanted to embarrass Shlomo. So why should he get rewarded? But even so, the deed itself was good. Shlomo needed to be criticized. So even though the intent was bad, one is still rewarded for the deed which is good. And this is implicit in Rashi's pshat. If it sounds rather strange to you, I will give you some other examples, one of which is very, very famous, and you probably heard of. The other is a little less famous. Very famous Chazal. That when Moshe Rabbeinu was about to approach the war against Og, HaKadosh Baruch Hu came and said, Al Tira, don't be afraid, ki biyad of nisata. Just before that, Moshe went to battle against Sichon, and there was no such reassurance from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So why was Moshe afraid of Og? He wasn't afraid of Sichon. Because Og had a chesed to his credit. Og was the one who told Avram that Lot was captured, and as a result of which, Avram was able to rescue Lot. But Chazal say, why did Og do such a favor to Avram? Because he assumed that if he told Avram that Lot was captured, Avram would attempt to rescue him. And there's no way Avram is going to beat the four kings. So he will get killed. And then Avram is out of the way, Og could go after Sarah. So his intention was evil. Yet, Moshe was afraid that the schus of Og might create a problem for him. And he needed a reassurance from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that it wouldn't happen. So you see that if you do a deed which is good, even though the intent is evil, it is still rewarded. So here too, Yerubim did a deed which in essence was good, because it was giving proper tochacha. In other words, he was right in his criticism of Shlomo. He didn't make this up and he didn't distort it. It was a correct criticism. So therefore the deed was good. So even though the intent was bad, there is still a reward, and he was zochel l'melucha for the deed. I heard a similar idea from Rav Harris, from a Gur Aryeh, it's a slightly different nuance, where the deed was evil, but the intent was good. The daughters of Lot, after the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, they're hiding out in the mountains, so they thought, or convinced themselves, or whatever it may be, that the whole world is destroyed. And there's no future for the human race. So they got Lot drunk and they had relations with him. So the older one went first. And she gave birth to Moab. And from Moab came Rus, who we're about to read in the Megillas Rus and Shavuos. And from Rus came David HaMelech and eventually the Melech HaMashiach. So the Gur Aryeh says, why was she Zolcha to have David and Malchus based David and Mashiach come from her? Because she was a Zoris. She did it first. But what she did was an Avera. There were really other people in the world. There was no Heter to have relations with her father. So what do you mean you were a Zoris? But according to her calculation, to her mistaken calculation, she thought she was doing a mitzvah. So even though the deed was evil, but the intent was good, you get rewarded. And by Og, we find that if the deed was good and the intent was evil, you also get rewarded. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, so to speak, to use human terms, is looking for an excuse, if you will, to reward us. So if I could be hanging on the kavana, all right, it was a bad deed, but look at the kavana, that was nice, we'll give you a reward for that. If the kavana was evil, but look at the deed was nice, we'll give you... It doesn't work like that, hopefully, for Averis, I don't know exactly, but the so here too, this is more similar to the old case, that evil, according to Rashi's understanding, Yeravim ben Nevat's motive was evil, and was Vayarm Yad B'melech, he wanted to embarrass Shlomo, but the deed was good, and therefore, although he was punished for his evil intent, he was also rewarded for the good that he did.
For Shashiva?
Yes.
So was it his place in the first place, you know, to rebuke Shlomo, that he should be rewarded for that?
Yes, somebody had to do it. If his intent, according to Rashi, the implication was, obviously if his intent was good, he wouldn't have done it in public. But had he done it properly and been mochiach Shlomo in private, it would have been a mitzvah. And it would have been a very brave mitzvah.
And nobody else, is nobody else more appropriate to rebuke Shlomo than him?
I don't know, he was a big Talmud Chacham. The fact of the matter is nobody else did it. Maybe there were, could have been others who should have, but they didn't. He did. The Ramah, as long as you're talking about the Ramah, as long as we want to maintain our analysis of this pasuk, Ramah has a different problem with this Chazal. Chazal say that Yeravam was punished because he embarrassed Shlomo, rebuked him in public, but Yeravam was punished for all the chatoim that he did later. That it's explicitly in the psukim, he prevented him from going to be all irregular. He set up avodah zarah. Introduced Avodah Zarah into the kingdom, he was a Chotei Machti. The Navi tells us why Yeravam was punished. It doesn't say because he embarrassed Shlomo. So the Ramah said that there is a concept that a Kadosh Baruch Hu sometimes protects people from chet. And generally speaking, for example, the Gemara says Torah is Magin U'Matzel. That a person who learns Torah and Torah Lishma is protected from chet. So Yeravam really would have had the schus of being protected from chet, and therefore Hashem would have, you know, managed history in such a way that he had less challenging nisyonos, if not for the fact that he embarrassed Shlomo. So because of this embarrassment of Shlomo, he lost, so to speak, the protection. The Chida is bothered by this. There's a problem. How could that be? It may be that he embarrassed Shlomo, but if there is a power in Torah to protect you from chet, where did it go? Now we do know that Torah only protects from chet if the Torah is learned Lishma. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin talks about Doeg HaEdomi and Achitofel, who were both great Talmidei Chachamim, yet they were terrible Rishayim. And the Gemara says that's because their Torah was Misafa L'chutz, from their lips and onward. It wasn't in their hearts. They didn't do it Lishma. They didn't learn Musar. It didn't penetrate their hearts. But Yeravam is different. Yeravam has said his Torah was Ein Bodolfi. So there was nothing wrong with his learning. His learning was on the highest levels and with the proper way, with Lishma, and it did penetrate his heart. So how could it be that this happened? And the Chida says something, again, an important concept, and really the Chavos of Bava says it in a general way. The Chida is applying it specifically to Yeravam. There was a sequence of events, and it sort of demonstrates the fragility of man. As great as a person is, there's always the potential for that downward spiral. That's why Chazal tell us, Al-Tamin Ba'atzmacha Ad-Yomoscha, a person should never trust himself until he dies. And the Gemara tells the story of Yochanan Kohen Gadol, who served in the Beis HaMikdash for decades, for 80 years, and then became a tzaduki at the end. So you can never be sure. This was the sequence of events according to the Chida. Yeravam was a Gevaldige Talmid Chacham, and he was an Eved Shlomo. He was an important figure, and he was parallel and contemporary, you know, close to Achia Shiloni in his Torah. Everything was wonderful. But there's still one very challenging Nisayan. A person who has reached the highest levels of Torah and the highest levels of Shmir Satara and Mitzvahs has one very dangerous adversary left. The Satan has a very powerful weapon left in his arsenal. Satan turns around to him and says, Taka, you've accomplished a lot. You are a great person. You deserve kavod. You deserve honor. And gaiva, arrogance, pride seeps in. I just saw a quotation. Somebody says, if I only had a little bit of humility, then I'd be perfect. So the nisayon for gaiva is very powerful. And if you look, the Chavos Halvavos talks about the different levels of Avodas Hashem. When he gets up to the second highest level, it looks like it's perfect. So a person who does everything, shelo amanas lekabel pras, he's not interested in rewards. All he wants is to be marbe kvod shamayim. He's a tzaddik, he's a chassid, he's the greatest level. But there's one thing he has to watch out for, which is gaiva. Because when everything else fails, that's the last weapon. Ooh, look, Taka, you're right. Look at what you've accomplished. Look at what a tzaddik you are. Because of his gaiva, Yeravam found it offensive that here Shlomo was the king and getting all the covet in the world. And look what he did. He was Mila Esaparis. He closed up the walls, which Yeravam, with his deep understanding of Torah, realized was wrong. And that is what, in essence, motivated Yeravam to embarrass Shlomo. So there was a mixture of gaiva mix, and of course he did it because he wanted, to bring to his attention the avla. But what was really underlying the motive was a shemitz of gaiva. Once that happens, he says the Torah no longer protects you; it was not lishma anymore. And he had gone now, instead of learning Torah l'shem shemayim, it's for kavod, for gaiva. So that's what caused the downfall, and one thing led to another. Afterwards, when he became the king, he was worried that Rechavam is going to get more covered than he would, because I go to the Beis HaMikdash, Rechavam gets to sit in the Azar, I have to stand. So he didn't want to go, but it's not enough that he doesn't go. He didn't want his people to go. They should see the covered of Rechavam. Why am I not there? And one thing led to the other. Eventually he introduced Avodah Zarah, and Zechotah Yomachdeh. And in the end, you remember the Chazal we quoted before, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to Yeravam and I gave him an opportunity to do tshuva. He says, if you do tshuva, you and I and Ben Yishai will be metayel b'Gan Eden. We will take a stroll in Gan Eden together. And Yeravam wanted to know, mi barosh? Who's first? Who goes ahead? Ben Yishai, David, or me? He says, David barosh. He says, I'm not interested. So that defines the flaw of Yeravam. It started off on a very fine level, because when Chazal say Torah Sein Bodofi, they weren't exaggerating. It's Torah Sein Bodofi. But he failed that last nisayon of the Chavos Halvavos. He allowed that gaiva to creep in. That led him to criticize, although the criticism itself was proper, but it led him to criticize Shlomo in public, to embarrass Shlomo, so he should look better than Shlomo. That came from the gaiva. Therefore, he lost the protection of the Torah. Then the gaiva grew in him, as is the derech of the Yetzirah, if you don't stop him. Chazal tell us the Yetzirah, many different Chazal, similar idea. One Chazal says there's a pasuk that talks about a traveler and a guest and then a resident and the balabayas. Says the Yetzirah comes as a traveler and then becomes a guest, and soon he takes over the household. Or another Chazal, Hoy Moshe Chayavon. The Yetzer starts off as a thin thread and then it spins another thread and it gets thicker, and before you know it, it's a rope. So that's what happened with Yeravam. He started off on a very high madrega and he had tremendous potential, and that's why he was chosen. But he did not catch on, he did not prevent that guy from taking hold of him. And the first step was this criticism of Shlomo, which Be'etzem was proper, but was done in an improper fashion. And eventually he was the Chotei Machti, brought Avodah Zarah and everything into Kali. So it all came from that same source. Chazal say something else as well. Same Gemara. We find the expression Vayarim Yad B'Melech twice. Once in Pasuk Chavav, and then again in Pasuk Chav Zayin, Hayim Yad B'Melech. Because of the repetitiveness of this phrase, Chazal and Medayik that he actually had two acts of rebellion. One was the fact that the criticism was delivered in public. The second one says, the Gemara, that he took off his tefillin in front of Shlomo. Now, Again, remembering that the original mitzvah of tefillin, it's still the mitzvah of tefillin, we just don't do it. The mitzvah of tefillin is really to wear tefillin all day. We don't do it because in order to wear tefillin, you have, first of all, you're not allowed to be Maseach Das, you're not allowed to forget that you have the tefillin on. And secondly, you have to keep a gufnaki, a clean body. So these are very difficult to do. And we don't want to insult or be mevazeh the tefillin. So the minhag now in Klal Yisrael is that you only wear tefillin for davening. And in that short period of time, while you're be'osek b'tefillah, hopefully you'll be able to treat the tefillin properly. But in the time of Shlomo, people were wearing tefillin, you know, the whole day. Now sometimes you had to take off the tefillin for one reason or another. So he took off the tefillin in front of Shlomo. And that was a rebellion. And the Gemara says, from here we see, that a Talmud is not supposed to take off his tefillin lifnei rabba. The question is, why? What is wrong with taking off the tefillin in front of Shlomo or in front of your Rebbe? So here there are two opinions in the Rishonim, maybe more, but there are two opinions we'll talk about. Rashi says, when you take off your tefillin, you're Megala Rosh. You uncover your head, and that is disrespectful. Now, it's a little bit unclear exactly why that's so. What way are you Megala Rosh? Now, I don't know exactly what they used to wear on their heads. You know, if you have a yarmulke on, you could take off your tefillin without being Megala Rosh. Some of them had some kind of a turban. It could be that to remove the tefillin, you had to adjust the turban. I'm not sure. But I guess that somehow, you're Megala Rosh when you take them to him. So some of the Akronim want to be medactic from here that you're supposed to cover your head. Right? We don't have any explicit reference to that in the Gemara. I mean, it became a minhag amongst Klal Yisrael. Maybe there is some references to covering your head when by Dabar Shefa Kedusha. But if you said that by taking him to him, he uncovered his head, that means the presumption was otherwise his head was covered. So the Har Tzvi, Rasi Pesach Frank, who's the Rav of Yerushalayim, based on the Yeshuas Yaakov, brings a mahalach which sort of avoids this. I saw this in Nachas Shimon. He says, but it's kind of interesting, so I wanted to share it with you. He says that the Yeshuas Yaakov suggests that you're allowed to go Begili Rosh if you're wearing tefillin. It's something that's kind of counterintuitive to us. We would think that if you have your tefillin, that's all the more reason to cover your head. But the Yeshua Sagar says no. It says the whole idea of covering your head is to remind yourself that Kodesh Baruch Hu is above you, and therefore you should be noy b'kovet rosh with a seriousness and subjugate yourself to Hashem. Well, that's what tefillin says. So if you have your tefillin on, there's no need to have your head covered. So therefore the Har Tzvi says maybe it was Adarabba. But since they were wearing tefillin, they were not covering their head. So when he removed the tefillin, he was Megillah Rosh, until he put his hat on. So you uncover your head in front of the king, covering your head is a sign of kavod, uncovering your head is a sign of lack of kavod. So it's an act of disrespect to take off the tefillin. Yeah, Masha, yeah. According to Rashi, the problem was that you're Megillah Rosh, either because the mechanics of removing the tefillin caused you to temporarily uncover your head, but uncovering your head in front of the king or in front of the Rebbe is a lack of kavod, or if you go with this mahalach, he literally uncovered his head because he was only wearing tefillin. That was b'makom, covering your head. When you take it off, your head's uncovered. By the way, this is considered an act of rebellion. Right? It says Asher Heirim Yad B'Melech, and perhaps is worthy of death. We don't really appreciate what kavod means. Today's society, we'll talk about this a little more later, but today's society, you know, what's kavod? Right? The most powerful person in America, I suppose, is the president. The moment you become president, even really before, you become a target for all the comedians and all the cartoonists, right, and all the cynics to try their best to be mevaze you as much as possible. So that whether you agree with the policies or don't agree with the policies, it has nothing to do with it. By the way, there is no bias in this. You know, you say, well, you know, the media is more liberal, it's a conservative president, they pick on him. Don't worry. They do the same thing with the liberal presidents. It's just a lack of cover. They may vote for them, but you'll still have the cartoons and the comedians and the cynics and everything else. So there is no concept of kavod in America. But here we say, look at this. What kind of act of kavod? You uncover your head, especially, it's temporarily, either chat. For a moment, you uncover your head in front of the king. The pasuk calls that Harim Yad B'melech. What kind of a chutzpah that is?
Was it a special situation that caused that moment? Why at that moment?
No, again, I suppose it depends on whether you learn like Rashi or the Rama. Rashi would say it was deliberate. He wanted to show the king that he didn't hold of him. You know, just like he wanted to embarrass him. Rama would probably say whatever it was. He had some reason for taking it off, but he didn't realize that he was showing disrespect. Now, another interpretation, I believe the Rama, not the Rama, but the Rama says it. Well, there are some nuances here. This is, let's start with this. This is not actually the Rama. This Rama is a slight variation of this. But one other interpretation is that one of the requirements of tefillin, one of the ideas of tefillin, is that it indicates the term that Chazal referred to as kovod rosh. It's hard to define kovod rosh. It's easier to define it by its opposite. The opposite of kovod rosh is kalus rosh. Kalus rosh is frivolity, lightheadedness, joking around, not taking things seriously. Kovod rosh means a certain sense of seriousness and decorum. When you wear tefillin requires kovod rosh, which is also one of the reasons why we don't wear tefillin the entire day. Taking off tefillin is sort of like signaling kalus rosh. So to do that in front of the king is inappropriate.
Maybe. Does the front of the king mean next to him, or is the big message in the same room goes the front of the king?
I don't know. How in front is in front, I don't know. Actually, I think in the Torah it says you should turn to the side. So it's mashma in front of him means literally facing him. Because the Torah is mashma if you turn to the side. This is brother halacha, even though we don't have kings today, because the same thing applies in front of your Rebbe. So if you're not facing him, that's what the Torah says, come to think of it. If you're not facing him, then it's okay. You could turn to the side. The Torah brings a daya, an opinion, that when it says you shouldn't be cholet tefillah lifnei rabo, lifnei doesn't mean in front of, but before, chronologically. It's after davening, right? You take off your tefillah, wait for your Rebbe to take off the tefillah first. Don't go first. So wait for the king to take off his tefillah first. Don't go first. So the lack of kavod is you're jumping ahead of the king. Like there's a certain derech eretz that I'll follow your lead. You're the king, you're the leader, you're my Rebbe. It's time you do it first, then I follow you. If I do it first, then it's like I'm the leader. Like I go first. So that was the lack of kavod, according to this day it brought down in the Torah.
But that works in today's society where we're only wearing it for davening. We're saying that by Shlomo, they're wearing it all day. I mean, that the guy should never take off his own. Chronologically, does it work in that society?
Well, then you have to go out. So don't do it. If you're not, the king's not there, obviously there's no such problem. But the problem is maybe there was a reason to take off the tefillin. Right? They had some basis why they're taking off the tefillin. Let the king go first. So by jumping the gun and going first, there's an element of disrespect. Okay, let's stop here for now.